Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Well, we were saying earlier that the number of people now believed to have died in the earthquake in Turkey and Syria, that number is just rising rapidly hour by hour. We started the programme this morning saying that we were getting reports that 9,500 people were confirmed dead. Now it's over 11,200, and you have to wonder where that figure is going to end up. Hundreds of thousands, possibly millions of men, women and children left homeless and in desperate need of help in both countries. So what's the immediate priority now to help people who are struggling in that region? Lucy Easthope is Professor of Risk and Hazard at Durham University and author of When the Dust Settles, Stories of Love, Loss and Hope from an Expert in Disaster. Professor Easthope, thank you for joining us this morning on the programme. How do you assess the response so far in the immediate aftermath of these earthquakes?
Oh, thank you very much for having me on. This is looking incredibly difficult. So really, anything is a miraculous achievement. In terms of factors that are affecting this, this has every possible additional challenge. So there's an awful lot of work going on, but the task is phenomenal.
And talk to me about what you have seen. I know you're just going on what we're all going on, you know, the pictures that we're seeing, those desperate rescue attempts, the erection now of tents so that people have some shelter from the cold weather. Is it going as you would expect, or what's the reality of this in the aftermath of a disaster?
It never feels quick enough for people on the ground. And I think that's one of the most heartbreaking things to witness is people saying nobody is coming. This is Mother Nature at her most destructive. The quake was so close to the surface that it's caused terrible loss of buildings and high-rise buildings. So people are feeling very abandoned in certain areas. We don't have a huge amount of information of rebel-held areas of Syria. So there's some big unknowns in this response at the moment. But everything is adding up here for this to be just the most complex of humanitarian disasters.
And over 70 countries have pledged aid, haven't they? But how is that coordinated? How do the logistics come together on the ground? Because I'm sure it can't always run smoothly, Lucy.
Absolutely. And there's a long history of actually the aid itself being almost a second disaster within the disaster. This is the kind of scenario, though, that we can plan for. We know that earthquakes are very much a part of this region's risk profile. And there are some very well-established mechanisms for sending out coordinated aid. So Ireland is part of the EU Civil Protection Mechanism, which has been activated. And that's a very organised response. And also, particularly on the Turkish side, Turkey has preparedness in this area and will hopefully be being given the chance to coordinate what it needs. It's very important that, you know, sometimes aid sent in can be very overwhelming. There's a long history actually of search and rescue teams not always getting on and coordinating quite poorly together, but hopefully what we'll see here is certainly a few weeks of just everybody pulling together. In my work, the big challenge comes about the 12-14 week point. The media's eye has moved on, but the really hard work is only just beginning.
Explain that to us. What does that look like?
So it can really feel for communities like a complete sense of abandonment. And that, you know, that's why my book's called When the Dust Settles. As the dust settles, you kind of take stock of just how much work there is to do. Communities can feel very isolated. We will only start to see the true scale of loss at about that point. There's an initial death toll now, but that will increase due to cold, injury and illness. So, one thing I would ask people listening is don't feel helpless. Please donate, but donate cash, not donated goods or blankets or jumpers. Please donate cash to the charities that are well established in the area.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, because even on social media this morning, I saw some really well-meaning groups and individuals asking, is there a drop-off point in such and such a town where I can leave supplies to be taken to Turkey and Syria? You're saying that's not what to do.
It's definitively not helpful, with just a few exceptions occasionally for a very specific targeted need. It's probably one of the worst things that you can do. It's a thing that gets me a lot of grief on social media. You know, people say, what do you mean? This is such a lovely thing to do. What we have some established supply routes. We can buy the things we need. If you've got things you want to get rid of, sell them and donate the cash to a recognized charity working in the area. So the hashtag is cash not stuff, and I cannot express enough how important that is. All it does is create extra work for the responders on the ground. It comes from a place of heart, but do remember that not all help is good help after disaster.
Okay, good advice. So the Turkish president then has announced this 3-month state of emergency for the 10 provinces affected in his country. In Syria, we've got areas that fall into government and opposition controlled areas. So Lucy, geopolitically, how do those situations impact the rescue and recovery efforts?
The thing that I think people find hardest is that 3 months is nothing. You know, 3 months, we just start to step back and get the scale of how big this is. We still don't and won't for a while have a full picture of what's going on in Syria. And to be honest, for that place to have been hit by an earthquake is just utterly devastating, because it is compounded disaster upon disaster. But this state of emergency will allow us to get some initial work done, some early demolition, start to take stock of people's longer term physical and mental health needs. But really, in my work, what we see is the hard work's only just beginning then.
How big a problem is sanitation? We heard earlier this morning on the programme that some of the water supply in Turkey has already been contaminated with sewage.
This is a major issue. There's a double-edged sword with disaster. We worry about disease at this point, obviously, but we also, disease can be what we call a disaster myth, and it can be the kind of thing that makes responders act in very rushed ways. So perhaps hurry the clearing away of a site without a family having a chance to gather their personal effects. And also it can mean that communities rush to bury their dead in mass graves, and the families will always then never have closure over who's lost. So it's really good at this point if we can get an idea of the true disease risk. One of the things that we'll be sending out universally around the world is things like sanitation kits to try and get people clean water.
And those people who are going in there from the aid agencies, the government, the UN to help with this, how do those organisations deal with fatigue, burnout? Because as you say, you get to the 12 to 14 week point. If you have a team in there from day one, they're going to be absolutely depleted by the time they get to the 3 month mark and beyond.
It's a major issue. And there's a line that I've had a lot of response to in my opening chapter, which is the hardest part of working in disaster is going home. People will feel pumped with adrenaline. They're very, very keen to help. We tend to feel privileged to work in this area of work. There'll be lots to keep them busy. What tends to hit later is, as you say, the exhaustion. This has also got a really toxic element to it, that people, particularly those perhaps deploying to Syria, are not going to be able to help to their full capacity. There will be reasons probably in both countries why people don't get to give and do everything they would want to do. Generally, when we debrief these workers when they come home, they often feel a huge sense of pride, but also a real frustration at what they aren't able to do as much as what they are. So if you've got one of those responders in your family and they've headed out or they're getting ready to head out, look after them, because this is a very, very tough deployment. And also, to extend that, if you have brothers and sisters from Turkey and Syria in your community, please look after them at the moment. They're in Ireland, because I think one of the hardest things when you are based somewhere else, comms are down, people can't get contact, is this is a desperate time for those communities in Ireland. So please do reach out to them.
Well, there's no doubt this is going to be a long, long road. And Lucy, we'd love to talk to you again as time goes on, just to check in and get your assessment on how you think things are going. So hopefully we'll speak to you again before too long. But for now, Lucy Easthope, Professor of Risk and Hazard at Durham University, thank you for joining us on the programme. Back after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.